Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com with Pete Sampson and Tim O'Malley. I'm Tim Priester. It's Monday, August 14th. We had an opportunity to see our third open practice of the preseason, practice number 11 on Saturday. We didn't get a chance to see the full practice as we did the first two times, but about 50 minutes, Pete and I had a chance also to go through the tour of Notre Dame Stadium on Friday, which was quite enlightening. And Notre Dame, of course, also got a verbal commitment from wide receiver Kevin Austin. A lot to talk about, guys. Let's start with what we saw again on Saturday, and for the second practice in a row that we had a chance to witness, we saw the defense do some really, really good things.
Yeah, I wonder if the defense is ahead in its installation sometimes over the offense. If the offense is still installing and the defense is a little more rounded into what they're going to be doing, they might. I mean, that can explain why you're better at some things in practice. If the offense is installing and not constantly installing and not there yet.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. I also think that Mike Elko is a veteran defensive coordinator, has been through this before, and I wouldn't say their defense is simple, but it's a lot more understandable. The communication is better.
So
and
I thought maybe they might be ahead. Simple, I'd want to use simple. But
I also think that if Brian Kelly is saying that, that means the battle in the trenches is at least even now, whereas in the spring it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't want to read too much into anything we saw Saturday because it was brief and they didn't tackle. So that's, you know.
You said in the instant analysis that the defense won.
They did. But that's like winning something that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but it's still 7-on-7 red zone work, and I thought the DBs played pretty well.
I agree with all that. I'm just saying that I don't think it's going to be predictive of really anything during the season. I think it's a good... What I came away from Saturday thinking was the defense knows where to be down after down after down. That's great. I don't know if they can tackle, and I don't think Brian Kelly knows if they can tackle either, the way he answered my question about Mike Elko's defense and, you know, are they sort of getting it quicker than maybe you had hoped or expected, because it definitely seemed like they're in the right position. You don't see guys running wide open all over the place. But I think the physical aspect of it, the tackling... we just don't know, and that's really important.
Well, which is why I was surprised earlier in the week when he said that the defense was ahead of the offense. It's been so long since that's been the case that I was taken aback by that. So whatever, you take everything with a grain of salt, and I think in two straight practices we've seen progress with the defense in one form or another.
Yeah, I think that what we saw Saturday at Culver, there was tackling, and it was good. It was good-ish.
It was good at scrimmage.
Last 18 snaps that we saw in Culver were very good.
Yeah, and hopefully, I think we'll see like legit full-on tackling on Sunday at the open practice to the public in the stadium. I don't know if there was any big revelations for me. I just thought that on an individual level, Dante Vaughn continues to look good to me.
Nick Watkins, I think, also.
Yeah, it seems like the cornerback position is kind of what we expected it to be when camp started. I think the offensive line is maybe a little bit better than at least what I thought it would be. I thought Mustafa and Bars would be better. I think they have a chance to be just really good.
We don't want to overplay it like we did last August. But you also have
we were just wrong.
They
weren't good on the offensive line.
Right, and they weren't good on the defensive line, and they're better there, and they're stronger there.
But we were concerned about the defensive line last August. We were not concerned about the offensive line, and they were equally bad. But Vaughn has been impressive the whole time. Alex Bars has been one of the most impressive players in camp. And it's not for this year that it matters that much, but Michael Young is a fantastic football player. And he's going to start for Notre Dame in 2018. Someone's losing their job to the sophomore next year. He is a football player. He's not just...
He's just quicker than all the... When the ball is snapped, he's the quickest receiver they have.
And he's aggressive. I mean, he's just... They wouldn't have this issue if this is his second year. Then you'd know who the second or third guy was. It would be him.
He certainly doesn't run around out there like a guy that is a freshman.
It probably won't work out this year that he can take jobs as a freshman. Because they do have some... they have developing guys there that are older and are going to know some things. But he impresses me every time I watch him do something. Even just the knack of you're in a drill and how he sets up a slant.
Yeah.
Doesn't just run a slant because you're told to run a slant. He, like, sets it up to get open. And that's, you know, I don't know if you could do that in a football game because you have 1.2 seconds to run that slant. But he just, he, I mean, he's just, I think he's going to be a good player. So down the line, that'll be good.
It's a regular Chris Fink.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
I also thought it was Brian Kelly mentioning the 73 or 76 plays that they ran on Saturday and that Sam Mustipher, conditioning-wise, he didn't feel there was much of a difference at play 76 than there was at the start. And that's a really good sign because he wasn't, I think we commented about this or I commented about it during last season. I mean, Mustipher was not in great shape and you could see it. But that was probably the case with a lot of guys.
Don't you wish we'd have a point of reference where there'd be a year where he's like, you know what? We're just not in very good shape. We didn't have a very good summer. Our strength and conditioning has really lagged, and I hope we can make up for it because everything is always the best strength and conditioning.
That will never
I do believe it, but that will never happen.
That will never happen. But it's
just wait till next year.
It's
going to be amazing.
It's up to us in the media to spot that and point that out.
Yeah, because we talked about this all off season, but Sam Mustipher played hurt last year.
Yeah.
Like, who's in great shape with a sprained ankle? Nobody. And that, I think he just really got dinged. He wore down as the season went on. We'll see if he stays healthy this year. He's, I got a chance at a very good season. I mean, they bring, I should know this, but like the total starts returning. But I mean, four starters and then Kramer. It's, has a chance to, I hesitate to say like their best line, but it has a chance to be their best line.
Well, add 48 starts, all those guys, right? All four of those guys.
They only started 12 games last year.
You got about 12.
Yeah. Right. I'm saying times four because you had four of them. So add 48 to what they had going into last year.
Yeah, I was saying they were 30. So they're pushing 80 at this point. I think it's a really good group. Brandon Wimbush, I kind of want to see more. I'm not like alarmed or concerned because I think he'll be fine and have a good year. He's just sort of a, I have a hard time getting a read on like how good he is or isn't in practices.
I agree. We need to see more live stuff. There's no doubt about that. And he's never taken a snap as a starter. And that's going to show at times. It just is. I mean, reading coverage, he's going to force something or he's going to get impatient and take off before he allows it to unfold. That comes with it. We all know he's going to be a good quarterback. But he's going to be way better next year and the year after. That just comes with a position.
That's probably true, but if you think about it, when did DeShone Kizer, other than Georgia Tech, that was his first start, when did he ever show that problem? Being a first-year starter where he got worse. I mean, Ohio State's because they're better players.
You mean when he had Will Fuller on the field?
Of course. I mean, that really helped a lot. But I'm saying in his first year, maybe that's the difference. He had Will Fuller on the field.
Well, it's part of it. It's never one thing.
But he was a guy that kind of took it by storm in his first year. And it's a similar situation. He's not a true freak. He's not a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Wimbush, actually, we're going to talk about him later in this, but Wimbush is pretty self-aware of his situation because I haven't played since I fumbled for a touchdown against Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Right. last snap?
Yeah. Last snap where anything happened. He was handing off other than that. So, it's interesting to see how much it affects him. There'll be games. There's no way of avoiding there'll be games or even more importantly, second halves probably, where you see it. But I don't think it has to be a problem all year.
No, it's just...
It'd be a problem against Georgia in the third quarter, but that's the issue.
Yeah, the red zone drill that we watched on Saturday, I think he had 7 snaps, 2 completions, but one was like a check down to Josh Adams where he couldn't find anything. The other one was a touchdown to Cole Kmet over Drew Tranquil. And the other ones just were not close.
Right.
We're probably looking at thrown away. I feel like it's like you can hear his thoughts.
Yeah.
On the sideline about like,
well, Book was involved in a couple of those too.
Isn't that a red zone?
No, I don't really care what Book did.
I thought those were, I mean, my offensive report, I thought those were coverage issues. There wasn't anything Wimbush could really do about several of those.
Doesn't it kind of come down to those are 3rd and 8 red zone drills, though? He can't run. He can't hand off. There's no... He has
to throw.
Which
is why we need to see him live.
Yeah, he has to throw to 5 guys covered by 6. Well, 6.
Probably out of half of them, he just would have run for a touchdown.
Right, so that... But yeah... on third and eight. I mean, that is, you get plenty of third and eight. And that, third and goal from the eight, though. You get plenty of that.
Like, that's my whole point with Wimbush and not really knowing what I'm seeing.
Right.
Because I think that his practice approach right now, which is my really uneducated opinion, is like, okay, I can't run and I can't get hit. I'm just going to stay back here and I'm going to go through all four reads. And if that takes 15 seconds, so be it. Because it's just, this is a contained environment. It's not like, I don't want to say like it's not real football, but so many things are being taken off the table. It's, I think it'll just be completely different when it's live.
And that's the issue with today's game. He's not going to get hit. Yeah. Until Temple. Now, I mean, I'd have to go back. I mean, Holtz would allow his quarterbacks to be hit at a certain point to some extent. I don't remember exactly when that all changed, but nobody lets their quarterback get hit, and he's got to flip a switch come September 2nd.
We talked about this with how he wouldn't get hit, and we thought, well, remember when Holtz let his starting quarterback, Ron Pelles, get hit, and then ended his season in August? But last year they had to get hit because they were competing. Maybe Wimbush, as an aside, thinks it's illegal to get sacked in Notre Dame Stadium from watching games. Mm. And that's why he's standing back there for so long. But no, you can't really hit him as he's the only guy. Last year, they had to hit Malik and Kaiser. They're trying to figure out who's going to start. You're totally protecting Brandon Wimbush right now, but it's a concern. There's a question about it. It is a concern. I think we're already talking about that question, so we might as well just finish it out. Yeah, he got hit and he fumbled. And you know what that comes from? Not getting hit very often, because he probably wasn't hit a whole heck of a lot during practice as the number two in 2015 either. It's just, he's going to probably take some serious shots early on that he hasn't experienced in a long time, or ever.
Yes.
Because he wasn't much of a scout team guy.
But it's like,
you know?
That's what happens to every quarterback everywhere.
I guess he's a junior it's a bit odd. Because he never really was the scout team guy either. For a month, right?
Yeah. I don't know, it's just like, it's a weird question, concern, because this happens everywhere to everyone, and like, it's not like you have quarterbacks like, whoa! Yeah. Just like throwing the ball up in the air. Like, I don't know what to do!
You know, but I mean, imagine being in their place where Wimbush hasn't taken a hit since the Pittsburgh game 2 years ago.
I think as long as he just gets through the first hit, he'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, he said that when we interviewed him at Culver, that he would like to take a hit in practice, he says, knowing full well that he won't.
Right. Right.
But he said, I would like to take a hit. And look, he said, when I take my, knock on wood here, he said, when I take my first hit at Temple, I'm going to bounce right up and, you know, relish the contact. I hope to hell he can bounce up.
Yeah.
Maybe like we can stick a media member out there and we can just like tackle him or something. Just see how it goes. I mean, it's not like we're asking Nico Fertitta to do it.
Oh boy. Well,
I'd like to take some hits of practice. I like to cover kicks. They just won't let me.
Right.
There's no way.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, we got in when we get to our question segment, we have a whole bunch of more football stuff to talk about as it relates to this team, but Kevin Austin did verbally commit to Notre Dame. Most people thought he would for a long, long time, including our Kevin Sinclair. Kevin was given a couple conflicting messages there regarding that Austin would make a shocking statement, and he later explained to Sinclair that a lot of people were asking him about Duke, and people thought that he was trending toward Duke. So that was the genesis of his shocking statement comment.
Yeah, surprised some people who, I guess, were around Duke or something. I don't know. But anyone around Notre Dame, like, no one was surprised up here.
Yeah.
Duke would have been shocking in some terrible ways for Notre Dame. It's a huge pickup for a bunch of different reasons. One, he's a guy that they have liked for a long, long time. Fills a need in terms of receiver who just is like more of an all-around type of athlete. And then the board really drops off big time after him. Not that they're not in on some other guys, but the guys that are on or his peers athletically are real long shots. And the guys that they're in on that they think they can get are like sort of next level.
Yeah, Lawrence Keys is a little bit of a smaller receiver. I do like what he does. I'm not as high on Bryson Jackson. I don't think that he has quite that burst. What I like about, there's a lot to like about Kevin Austin. He has great size. He uses his hands to catch everything. He's really elusive in traffic. I think when I first looked at him and he was ranked 272nd in the country, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This guy's way better than that. He's climbed up 100 spots. And I get it, because I think sometimes he's a little bit, once he gets moving, he's really elusive. I think, you know, from 0 to 10 miles an hour, so to speak, it's a little bit of an adjustment for him. Which is why he's rated where he is. And I think when I saw some film of him in camp settings with other really good receivers around, and I think you saw a little bit of that lack of burst right out of his, you know, first step. But he's a really good player, and another guy with great size. And you're right, Pete. I mean, there's a drop off after that. They really needed him.
At the opening, he just got open all the time. He was really good out there, and you would just hear, touchdown, Kevin Austin. He was just outstanding there. He looks like a
did that get a lot of play during that time? I don't know that I heard a whole bunch of that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess there were a lot of good players. He's going to be a number one receiver here if he just stays, you know, on the developmental path that he's on. It, you know, I've done some digging into sort of his backstory, working out. He's very conscious of training and flexibility, not just strength, but flexibility. Right. Hip mobility is a big thing he focuses on, so he doesn't get stiff. I think it's just the fact that he is already likes to train and work out and just likes the off season is a real positive, because that's not something that every high school kid is into. They're just like, all right, is it Friday night or not? He likes June Tuesdays as well. So I think that's a big thing. Stadium, Tim and I walked through there. Tim O'Malley, you were there on Saturday with so you got to see the board. What did you think of the board being on and just sort of the potential for how that's going to impact Saturdays?
I think it's overplayed on how it'll impact the team. Like Brian Kelly had to talk about how it's a distraction to it. Better not be a distraction to him. They played in front of boards 5 times a year, right? But
what's their road record?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess this is a killer. They're gonna no, but it looks great. I think for fans, they're gonna love it. I talked to media relations Michael Birch about this. The ribbon, I like. It's kind of old school.
Did you bring that
font
up to him?
Well, you know, we were both talking okay about it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like an old school look, kind of like a your old TV screen. It's kind of cool how they did that. I'm surprised. It's easy to read, too, for someone that struggles. I need glasses at road games nowadays. So.
I mean, everybody's going to love the new scoreboard except those that are sitting in that end zone.
Yeah, that's a tough situation because we talked about this separately. Most stadiums have another smaller scoreboard for people in the big scoreboard end zone to see, and obviously they don't because you'd be blocking the touchdown Jesus situation, but there's nothing else to look at. So turning around.
What's wrong with Jesus?
Yeah, turning around to see the, turning around to look and see the play is going to have to,
They're going to have to use the ribbon scoreboard in order to.
But not to see the play. I mean, that's the whole point.
Have to turn around to see the play, and I would imagine the sound is going to be overpowering. I actually know someone that lives 3 miles from the stadium, and they were testing it a couple weeks ago, and he could hear it from his house very clearly. So it will be plenty loud.
It was loud Saturday. I just thought it was an empty stadium and all that, you know, but it was,
you know, I can see it not from my house. I live probably like 5 miles away, but it's those structures are just massive.
Yeah.
You
can see it from the top of the hill, kind of is what you're saying.
Miami Avenue.
You know, I will say this, and I'm not going to say it's going to help Notre Dame win more, but and yeah, Notre Dame has played with those scoreboards all the time, but they were the visiting team. You know, they were the enemy. And I think, you know, when a crowd's enthusiasm wanes, the scoreboard prevents that from happening.
Quite a bit.
And I think it, you know, for a visiting team, just because of the sound of it, you're never going to feel like you're out of the woods, like we've got this, just because the atmosphere will be that much greater. But you know, however it impacts Notre Dame or the opposing team, the atmosphere in Notre Dame Stadium is about to change forever, and it's something that we've never seen here.
Yeah, I had a feature that ran on Friday where I sat down with Mike Bonner, who's basically in charge of programming it. He's a pretty interesting guy. I think his thought is a home field advantage is something that can help with. Not taking a bad game and making it good. I don't think that you're not going to artificially create a home field advantage. But we talked a lot about, okay, let's take the Texas game and put it in Notre Dame Stadium last year when Torrey Hunter gets targeted. I think that gets replayed, and
that's a good point.
And the Texas player probably gets thrown out, and then Notre Dame scores a touchdown, and maybe they win the game. That's a real thing that a board can help you with, and I think one of the things that will enhance a home field advantage for Notre Dame. I just if I was a fan at these games, I would have been. It's going to enhance your experience. Like, you're going to know what's happening. Like, I think in a lot of places,
replays are important in football.
Replays are important just to know what is occurring.
Sure.
Now you can do that at Notre Dame Stadium. We all watch games at home on TV. You know everything that's happening all the time. So why would you make it worse if you were at the game? If you were paying $300 to go, and it just never made any sense to me. So I think just the user experience for the fan, forget the home field advantage, like whether Notre Dame's going to win more games or not, like, you're going to just have a better game day experience if you're a fan now.
Well, just even the game day experience, I think I go back to the Michigan game a few years ago in Michigan, when they're honoring Desmond Howard and they're showing all his highlights, and it gets louder and louder and louder and louder, and everybody's going crazy. And they literally, 2 weeks later, honored Tim Brown at Notre Dame, and they talked about it. They talked about his highlights.
Yeah.
Once we turned two punts against Michigan State, they were cool. I mean, it helps a lot that you guys you can see these things. But I thought an interesting thing in that story, Pete, was also not stemming momentum with what I know a lot of people get annoyed is when you're honoring a non-football entity, which you have to do, but not after Equanimeous St. Brown scores a touchdown to go ahead on USC. They're not going to bring out
the science professor. Right.
Yeah, I thought that was a...
Yeah, some flexibility in the...
Common sense flexibility, too. Yes. Is what it is. Yeah.
As far as the rest of, you know, the structure on each side, I mean, it's... Notre Dame doesn't usually do excess.
I'm glad there's no jumbotron. I'm just saying, if you sit in that end zone, you're not going to...
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not arguing that. I'm talking about the structures on the east and west side. I mean, Notre Dame doesn't usually do excess, so to speak. They've done excess in this instance with classrooms and restaurants and ballrooms and
a bar, right?
Yeah, $500 million will buy you a lot of excess. I'm not using the word excess as a criticism. I'm saying that this was an opportunity. They took advantage of it. I'll relent a little bit about the whole intermingling of athletics and academics, and I don't think that's the original intent of it all. It's the best use of space. But it's pretty spectacular. And we saw a lot of, there's still a ton of construction going on.
Mm-hmm.
We were walking by, you know, guys and women in hard hats the whole time. So there's still plenty to do, but, it's pretty spectacular. Even without the video board,
the road to excess leads to the Palace of Wisdom, Tim. That was on Club 23's bathroom bring wall on, when I was in college.
Bring on the wisdom.
That is a, yes.
Bring on the wisdom.
I always thought it was a cool quote.
Yeah. Nope.
There's no real follow-up to that. So that's it for segment one. We'll be back with questions next. Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. We've got a bunch of questions on our readers. First, we're going to take one from Twitter, and this was asked by about six different people, so I'll just reduce it to this. Who will be Notre Dame's second leading wide receiver by the end of the season?
Is it cheating to say Mac for this question?
Yes.
Okay, then I'm cheating. It won't be Mac. Okay, well, I would say Mac is this, although I have concern with his hamstring that early. That doesn't usually bode well for people. Goodness sakes.
It's a great question. It really is.
If it's not Mac. So total, just going by receptions or whatever. The biggest impact.
Just receptions.
Fink.
You're saying Fink?
I think it's Mac. And then I think it's a conglomerate of running backs. And then I think it's Fink.
It could be Cameron Smith.
I don't buy it.
Why not?
I'll totally buy it. Getting open because he got to get open.
Well, I mean, what have you seen that would indicate that he can't get open? I haven't
seen him getting open all the time.
It was funny because Brian Kelly said, you know, he isn't what I thought he was. We thought he could take the top off of defense. Well, that's because he did when he was playing for Arizona State against Notre Dame and Devin Butler was covering him.
Right.
it's not quite that easy. It really is a great question. I wouldn't rule out Cam Smith because I think he looks...
I'm not ruling him out.
Quick
I just had to pick
and,
one.
And, you know, physically strong. I think he could be that. Could it be Freddie Canteen? I don't know that we've seen anything that would indicate that at this point. I wouldn't completely rule out Chris Fink because every practice we've ever seen and virtually every game that he's played a prominent role in, he's open.
Yeah, I mean, I would have said, if not, you know, in a perfect world, I would have definitely said Stepherson prior to all this happening, of course. Yeah. So that's why. And once you remove Mac isn't like default. If he's healthy, he's going to catch plenty of passes.
Mm-hmm.
Who's yours, Pete?
I think it's going to be Fink. I want to say Claypool.
I do too,
but in my heart, it's Claypool.
It always will be. Yeah.
I feel like if EQ is back next year, you know, say this is 2018, we're sitting here.
And they only
then
Smith.
I would say I would be more inclined to say Claypool.
I would too, for sure. I would say Claypool.
What happened to Michael Young?
Michael Young will be third because Mac will be gone as well. No, but I think Claypool is a guy that might have some one catch games and maybe a no catch game, but have some good games too. So I think that hurts your total.
Yeah.
He could have more yards than Chris Fink on 23 catches for. Sure. He could average 20 yards a catch.
Yeah, and
Claypool because he's not a number one receiver.
People are wondering why we haven't said Miles Boykin. He's behind EQ on the depth chart, so
right.
It's
That's,
going to be.
I was just trying to figure out.
Now they can move EQ to the X and get him on the field, but he's a bigger, less agile, you know, wideout. So it's a little bit more difficult for him.
And I think it's
going to
be spread out in a bad way. The receptions, it's inconsistency. I think it's good. I think Claypool will catch passes. I think Boykin will catch some passes. Fink, Smith. Smite will have some.
So you're saying that
they need more good
there's
receivers.
Going to be a lead receiver and then a bunch of guys.
In a bad way.
Of course in a bad way because you should always, yes, it's always in a bad way, you know, contrary to some theories out there. In 2015, you know, Will Fuller, Chris Brown, Amir Carlisle, we took Amir Carlisle for granted a little bit, but he was third on the team in receptions. It's always better to have three go-to guys than a mass of people that you don't know that you can count on from week to week.
Right, which is why if EQ catches 70, Matt catches 57, and Claypool emerges and catches 50, there's your go-to guys.
Exactly.
And you're better off than having Claypool catch 20, Fink catch 25, and Cam Smith catch 20.
I feel like there's very, very little chance that the second leading receiver has 40 catches.
What about Mac?
I think Mac will be in the 40s.
Okay.
But,
that's right, yeah.
I mean, even... It would not shock me if Chris Fink was the second leading receiver with 27 catches. That would not surprise me at all.
Wow.
But that's not a good thing.
It's
not really.
Yeah. It's not a good thing. I do think Cameron Smith, just from the little we've seen of him, his explosiveness, how quickly he gets off the snap of the ball, a guy that is not necessarily a take-the-top-off guy, but more of an underneath guy, which makes him more of a candidate to catch passes.
The only guys that take the top off the defense well are the ones that are remarkable at it. Otherwise, they're just a fast guy that catches 15 passes. You know,
right.
Will Fuller was remarkable at taking the top off of it, so it opened things up. Most guys, when he's our speed guy, they don't make that big of a college football impact throughout or consistently each week to week.
Ty Montgomery, for example.
Yeah, he's just, you know, they're incredible talents. But it's better that he's...
Although he's found his niche in the NFL, hasn't he?
Vic Irish 1, I'm curious how the following players are in practice as the season approaches. Chase Claypool, great physical traits, but has lacked the hands. Jonathan Bonner, can he get to the passer? Jerry Tillery, are you getting the feeling he can make a true difference? And Kevin Stepherson, will he buy into the traits?
Of Claypool, Bonner, Tillery, and Stepherson, I'm most confident in Tillery and his production on a weekly basis.
By a wide margin, I would say.
Yeah. And then Claypool.
Well, I'm saying that because I haven't always expressed a lot of confidence in him. And still, three tackles for loss last year. I know he's a lot stronger. He's always had the length and the physical characteristics. I would like to think that he's going to take a significant step up this year. I have more confidence now that Jerry Tillery is going to take a step up than at any time since he came to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And then I think of the three remaining, just as Tillery is obviously the choice of the four, Claypool is easily the choice of the three that could have an impact on Notre Dame, a positive impact on Notre Dame this fall. Because he could be a playmaker. He can catch 20 passes and help Notre Dame win some games mm-hmm. because of the plays he makes.
Yeah, he will have a high yards per catch average.
He's not getting a bunch of 5-yard hitches second down to make it third and four.
And Stefferson, everybody keeps asking, and we want to know too. The fact is, on Saturday, he was wearing one of those orange bonnets as the show team cornerback.
He can probably come up to speed pretty quickly, but they got to give him. He's got to see the light of day first, right?
In theory, you can't get on the field without being on
not
the field.
Not with the new approach. Not with the stated new approach too. We're not reading into Brian Kelly. He has said it out loud.
No. that was one thing last week that struck me. I talked to Andrew Trombetti just sort of about like the mindset of the team and what's going on, and he said it was like, we know who's not getting reps. Like, we know who doesn't want to be here, and guys who don't want to be here usually quit. So that was like...
Doesn't want to be here is worse than not getting reps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That was...
Well, they go hand in hand. That is what Trombetti's saying.
Yeah, his quote is, I just feel like this year you have to buy in. If you're not bought into the program, then you either quit or you don't belong here. People know the people who don't want to be here and the people who haven't bought in. They're not getting reps. The people that are bought in, you know who they are. That's it.
Wow. That's a statement.
Yeah, so it's... I think it's just a situation where, look, Kevin Stefferson is not down with the program right now, and the coaches are turning him into an example of that. And there are people on our message board just like, well, do you think he's poisoning the locker room or setting a bad example? No, I think he's actually setting a great example for Brian Kelly. Not a good example for himself, but Brian Kelly either Notre Dame is going to benefit because Kevin Stefferson is going to get it together. And he's going to play, and he's going to be good. Or Notre Dame's going to benefit from all the other younger guys to be like, okay, I see what happened to Kevin Stefferson. I need to get my stuff together.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Bonner, can he get to the passer? I don't see it. I have not seen it with my own eyes.
I have no confidence in that one really at all.
More importantly... Hold the point of attack.
That's the most important for him.
Yeah, and as far as, here's a three to think about. 2 years ago, your three technique was Sheldon Day. And he could get upfield against virtually anybody. I just haven't seen it with Jonathan Bonner. So, is he strong enough to hold the point of attack?
We don't know.
Maybe warrant a double team every now and then, although I think Tillery would be that guy on the inside. I haven't seen it. I hope he does. They need it.
If you rated the 10 or 11 or 12 starters, including Nickel, on defense, I mean, he wouldn't be higher than 11 or 12, right?
He would not.
Yeah, he'd be 12.
Okay.
No.
11.
Including a Nickel.
I'm including
so there's 12.
Oh, yeah, then 12.
Yeah. Okay. Dashing Domer, do you think a healthy Nick Coleman will alter your feeling about the safety situation?
No. I don't think he's... Health is the problem at all. He's still learning.
He had a minor ankle.
Oh, okay.
I think he's up to speed now physically. So, I have more confidence in that. I know it's skeleton 7-on-7, red zone, open field, but on Saturday I saw him in coverage. I saw him make a move. Remember in the spring when we were surprised that on that one play about how much ground he covered. I thought he had good anticipation Saturday. I don't have much more to go on than that.
I think he'll play the ball in the air pretty well. I think tackling is going to be a problem. I think I talked to him about tackling, and he said it's really hard to tackle in space. He's going to play the rest of the year.
Yeah, you did the interview the other day. He didn't express a lot of confidence in himself, did he?
No, and that's okay, because some people have false confidence. I think one of the Notre Dame's ex-coaches told us that a lot. There's guys that tell you how confident they are and talk about confidence, and they really don't have it. I think Nick Coleman needs some success. This is one player I disagree with. Brian Kelly says these guys don't need to develop confidence. I think Nick Coleman, of all players, needs to develop some confidence. And I think he can play the ball well. I mean, look, he's a corner back there playing the ball in the air. That should help learning stuff. He's not totally comfortable back there yet, though. That's
the only thing worse than no confidence is false confidence.
Yes.
He holds his line, and there's a lot of truth to that.
Next up, SR5452, do you guys think not having two-a-day practices will hurt the college football product as a whole?
I mean, I wouldn't be educated enough on that one to know it, but I think maybe tackling could suffer more. But that's more of the way that people have to tackle now. It's just tougher to tackle now.
Would you like...
It's much more difficult to tackle now because there's restrictions on how you can do it. I mean, I can't think of another way of saying it. And you're all spread out. It's all horizontal. They're using the whole field.
Yeah, it's a wide game
now. You kind of got to let... If you don't want people scoring 50 and 60 every week, and I pointed this out when I said Notre Dame will score, whatever, 35 to 37 points a game, that 25 teams did that last year. It's not out of this world that Notre Dame could do it. You got to kind of allow some hand-fighting downfield, I think, with the corners to do something to combat the offense. I know I'm getting on a tangent here, but that's the bad product is when you're at 50 points. It's a bad product when everyone can score 50 points. It's a 50-point game like USC-Penn State is supposed to be those two teams at their peak because they're super strong, not because every time you turn on a game that someone scores 50.
But I don't. Fans don't look at that as a bad product.
I look at it as a bad product.
you're right. I get that. Yeah. And you're coming from a different perspective.
Right.
From an entertainment perspective, I don't think fans look at that as a bad product.
I guess I took hurt college football as a whole. I don't know anything else that could.
Oh, okay. I got you. Well, as far as two-a-days and hurting, I think everybody in the same boat, you're making adjustments. Notre Dame's practices are 2.5 to 2 hours and 45 minutes, or they have been up to this point. So I think they stretch that a little bit. I don't know. No. I don't think not having two-a-days will make it any worse.
My last thought on this is I think the two-a-days had more of an impact when you worked together all summer. That's a good point. Testing your strength and conditioning, testing all that stuff that was inevitably going to lag in the summer because you weren't in a team atmosphere. And they don't have that anymore. They're in a team atmosphere.
Yeah. The point of two-a-days was to work yourself back into shape. But if you're in great shape to begin with, you don't really need two-a-days. I don't see how this would hurt anything. It's a toughness test more than, I don't think they're like putting in great stuff on the second practice. Or they're like really getting after it on the second practice. It's just, and again, that's something that you're doing in the off season now when you go out and train and do all these runs and you do these military games and all that stuff. Like they're doing that long before training camp even starts.
2 days weren't two physical practices in the same day. There was a time when it was that way, but that's not what they were doing here in recent years. So and. Yeah, if your program is not in good physical condition, you need those two-a-days a little bit more. You probably incur more injuries than during two-a-days if your team's not in quality condition, which clearly this one is in much better condition.
Blue Chip Man, in 2017, does Brian Kelly overachieve, underachieve, or achieve relative to the team's talent level? What's overachieve record? We have to do it with records, otherwise it's really
hard. Well, I think anything, once you reach double digits, that would be considered overachievement.
10-2.
Yeah.
I'll say under then.
So at 8-4?
Yeah.
So you think achieved to his talent level might be 9-3?
Yes.
Yes.
You got to consider the schedule and all the stuff that goes into it. That's a fair way of breaking it down.
Yeah, I don't. I feel like 9-3 is
the team
a par for this team and this schedule.
Yeah, I'm more confident in overachieve or achieve to the level than I am underachieve. Just because of everything that...
I wrote down 11 instead of 10. So you're more confident in 10-2 than 8-4?
No, I wouldn't go... I don't know if I'd go that far because I think 8-4, 9-3 are both pars
to some extent.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to underachieve to the catastrophic levels that they did last year.
I wouldn't think so, but should that be our bar?
That was a zero achievement.
It was.
Yeah, I asked this question on Twitter and got a lot of feedback last week. Notre Dame goes 8-4.
I read that question.
They beat USC.
I refrained.
I did not put in that they also beat Navy.
Oh, I saw it, yeah.
But obviously, you have to beat Navy for this.
So they beat USC. So they beat USC, and the four losses would be to Miami, Stanford,
Georgia, and someone. A road game.
I don't think it necessarily matters.
Anyone Michigan State?
Oh, I said beat USC, close loss Georgia, close loss Stanford.
And you assume close losses to other teams.
I'm implying you beat Navy. Would you take it? It was kind of a split decision on that. Yeah, which
makes it a good question.
It's maybe like a... Actually, it was split in that it wasn't unanimous, but it was definitely trended more towards no.
It was a good question because 8-4 is the magical purgatory number you used. Yeah. But you beat USC.
Somebody actually replied to us with, like, that's purgatory.
Yeah, it is. I think 9-3 more people would have jumped on board, right?
Yeah, I think, underachieve is 7-5 or less. Par is 8-4, 9-3, and then overachieve is 10 or 11 wins.
Yeah, I disagree.
I think 8-4 is a miserable offseason for the Notre Dame program.
It's a 4-game improvement, but I realize that last year was extreme.
It's a 1-game improvement. I think it's a really rough offseason. I don't think the bowl matters. Although 9-4 looks so much better than 8-5 does, I don't think the bowl matters because you're going to beat Rutgers on the pinstripe.
Well, if they beat USC, they will be better than 8-4. I believe that. I don't have anything to back that up, but I believe that. Well, because if you're good enough to beat USC, then you should be better than 8-4. Although, have you heard the reports on their offense? USC's offense coming out of this past weekend. I mean, they could do nothing. They couldn't move the ball at all in a live scrimmage.
Their defense is out of their offense. I thought that was supposed to be refreshing.
Yeah,
good thing.
I mean, I'm sure it's not.
Western Michigan's going to kill
I'm sure it's not a Sam Arnold issue per se, but I mean, they're relatively inexperienced at receiver.
This question could last us the rest of the month. Honestly, this is slideshow. This is a great question.
Yeah. Slideshow.
Because I don't the 8-4 thing for me. Remember last year we were doing our predictions, and you said Tim Priester said we were all picked 9-3, and you said I could easily see 8-4, and beat us over there. He goes, oh.
the dreaded 8-4. If they just could have gone 8-4 last year.
I kind of feel that way now.
Yeah, I'm not.
What is losing 4 close games to Stanford, Georgia, USC, and somebody on the road really do for you at this point? Like, that's what it could have been last year, and it would have been okay going into this year. That would hurt, don't you think? I guess if you have a weird season like 14, where you're in the running, and then a bunch of injuries happen, and you fall off, and you lose a couple games. But that's not a normal thing, you know? Plus, that does include, like, Navy and those teams.
I'd be glad when we don't have to speculate about preseason stuff anymore.
If they go 8-4, will they lose to someone along the lines of Navy? Navy or BC would be the type of team you would lose to there.
BC.
On the road, 20-16, with nothing happening.
Just flat tire game.
Terrible tin can.
Yeah, if you're 8-4, you lose to BC or Michigan State, or at North Carolina, even though they're rebuilding in a lot of respects.
Because Navy's probably better than
NC
all those
State
teams.
NC State at home,
right? Isn't Navy better than those teams technically on a field? Would Navy go beat them?
Which teams?
North Carolina, BC, and Michigan State. Kind of.
Maybe.
I mean, it's just a different, I know Notre Dame should never lose to Navy, but they're not any worse than those teams we just said.
All right, let's follow up with our,
let's continue to ponder.
Follow up with this question from Wash ND, which kind of ties into this whole overachievement, underachievement. If Notre Dame wound up with a top 25 scoring defense this season, what would you predict their record would be? Which I think is a really good question.
10-2.
Me too.
10-2. I think they would agree with 10 games because last year's top 25th ranked scoring defense was Kansas State. They allowed 22.3 points per game.
Yeah, and Diaco was always right there in the 20-21. Besides the great
year. If you hit that number, that means you won every game that you should win. And then you're into USC, Georgia, Stanford.
And Miami, that's it.
And Miami, you split them. That's how you...
And you can outscore teams once in a while, too. You know, that you can't go out there and outscore teams.
Now, how do you get to 11-1? Brandon Wimbush plays to the level that Kaiser did his first year.
Offense is how you get to 11-1.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That top 25 scoring defense with the offense I predicted in the spring.
There you go.
That's how you get to 11-1.
There you go.
Can you beat Navy?
That was a pretty big departure.
Now, are they going to
Navy just 2 minutes ago?
That's why I don't see both happening.
Realistically, as far as, I'm not sure top 25 scoring defense is realistic. If what we're hearing about the defense here is valid and they continue to progress, top 50 defense?
Yes.
Top 40?
They better have a top 50 defense. They're going to play 9 close games.
Come on.
They got to do something. 50?
Well, I'm just where they have been for 30 games, Pete. 30 games. 30.
Yeah, that's true. I did say you roll the ball out there and you score 30 on Notre Dame.
We all have... you know, it's difficult not to have a lot of confidence in Elko.
Yeah, that's true, though. You're right. That's where they have been. That is where they have been. But it sounds terrible, though. You're both right. Top 50 sounds terrible, but you're right.
What sounds worse, top 50 defense or they went 8-4? Yeah, they doubled their win total.
I'm not going to say that again. Can I take those words back?
If I hear that in a press conference, there will be an audible groan.
TV. Can't see the game notes. It's like the game notes that said Brian Kelly's the first Notre Dame coach to win at least 8 games in his first 6 years.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad they didn't win 8 games, so I don't have to see that again in the game notes, because it's the worst game note I've ever seen for a team. I mean, are you kidding? Great.
Yeah.
All right, Pete, wrap us up.
All right, that's it for this week's Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. We'll be back next Monday. We'll have a ton to talk about at that point. We've got access to all the assistants on Wednesday, and then we've got a full viewing on Sunday in the stadium. So we'll have all sorts of good stuff to talk about next week. Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is sponsored by Duloc Leadership. I'm Len Clark of Duloc Leadership. A DISC personality profile workshop will help you and your organization improve its communication, enhance team performance, and increase customer service. In other words, it will save you money. To learn more about a DISC facilitated workshop, contact me at 219-771-1004.